Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, I'm not usually a big respecter of men. Like if you're some big shot dude, I'm like, whatever. You know, it's I try to keep it all on the level. So today, as the great Lieutenant Governor from the great state of North Carolina, my friend, perhaps still, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, welcome back to Call to Action. How are you, buddy?
It's great to be with you, Steve. I still know you're no respecter of men, so but thank you for that lead-in. At least it makes me feel good.
Yes, well, that's what I'm here for, is to make you feel good. And but we appreciate you, of course, and Dan and I have known each other for several years, and to watch you come out of kind of the regular business world where you were for a while as an architect and then get involved as an activist and then to run for office, not just any office, but Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. But here we are 4 years later. So you're running again, re-election.
Here we are.
And
6 months away.
What's this
or not.
Been like for
Unbelievable.
You?
Unbelievable.
Just a crazy ride.
It's been a crazy ride. Yeah. I mean, it flew by. You know, we're 6 months away. I've been doing this for 5 years now, I guess. So it went by much faster than I thought. And I think we've had a lot more success than I ever would have imagined us having.
Yeah, because it wasn't very pretty when you were running for office the first time. The state was in a big mess, really.
Yeah, it was in a big mess. And you know, you and I have talked about the successes of the state many times. I don't think there's another state in the United States that has been as successful as North Carolina. We could talk about a lot of different parameters that would indicate that success. But just this week, a few days ago, we heard that fastest growing state in America over the last 3 years since we've been in control here in Raleigh, 13.4% growth in our GDP compared to 1.5% for the rest of the country. Site Selection magazine came out today, said best place for business. Again, 2 years running, yeah. Number one in the country, best place for business. So all this narrative I know we're going to talk about today with
yes.
businesses saying, you know, we're not going to work in North Carolina as this big discriminatory state. Obviously, the narrative doesn't hold any water when you realize how strong our state really is.
Well, I'm going to give something to you as a present. I've been using this recently, and I think it really encapsulates a lot of what we're talking about. Feelings are the new facts. So it doesn't matter that this state is one of the best states in the union for business, for personal development, for what's going on with the economy and the job sector, all of these things. None of that matters. The only thing that seems to matter to people anymore, especially people on the left, is their feelings. And so we talk about feelings rather than facts. And then you've got this massive list. I saw this right when everything started to go kind of crazy with HB2, which we'll pick apart and talk about here for most of the show, but also, of course, want to talk about North Carolina, talk about your reelection campaign. But the facts don't matter. The fact that this is an incredible state, if it were such a hateful, bigoted, terrible state, these numbers wouldn't be bearing out, would they?
No, I mean, I think the facts do matter long term. The short term, you take these hits that are emotional hits from a lot of people that don't know anything about our state. They don't know anything about the legislation. They're following the dictates and the charge of a human rights campaign. That's really what it's about. It's about the human rights campaign holding all these businesses hostage across the country. I think eventually the day is going to come when they're going to get tired
yeah.
of being held hostage and the gun being pointed to them every time something goes down and them looking like fools in the end, because I think the business community is really going to look foolish after this.
Yeah, it's really been amazing to watch it. And Target, which has been front and center on all of this since they came out, which with, by the way, not a new policy. This has been their policy for several years now. But once they proclaimed it about a week and a half ago, and then now they're over 1 million signatures. AFA, of course, doing the boycott against Target. Their stock price is down. The company value is down about $2.5 billion. Yeah, there's only so far your ideology will take you. And HRC, I think, holds these guys captive.
Yeah, and they do. And you know, related to this Target thing, I think the thing that's most impressive is how it's gone viral with the average mom out there.
Yeah.
The lady who goes shops at Target a few times a week. And now, you know, you see thousands of ladies cutting up their Target credit cards and saying, I'm going to Walmart, and really doing a boycott for Walmart as much as anything. And yeah, there's only so much really tolerance. The C-suite is going to have that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, let's set this up, and then we're going to come up on a break here pretty quick. But let's go back to when Charlotte passes an ordinance, which gets the attention of not only yourself as lieutenant governor, and of course in the Senate where you also preside, but the House and even the governor himself. So what was going on inside the halls of our government here in North Carolina when you saw Charlotte taking action on the bathroom bill?
Well, first of all, you have to go back a year, right? So you have to go back to when Charlotte tried this a year ago. They didn't pass the ordinance at that time. They get a new city council, a new mayor to come on board, and then they say we're going to do this again against the advice of their legal counsel, against the advice of our legal counsel, and certainly against the advice of the governor, who said we're going to take immediate action if you do something about this. So they jumped in with both feet, right? And some people, I've had somebody say to me today, in fact, on a radio program, you guys regret doing what you did. I said, we didn't do anything. Charlotte did what they did.
Yeah.
That's really where the focus should be, and then we had to react to it, and they knew we had to react. And that's what we did with HB2, was react so we could keep women and little girls safe in bathrooms and shower facilities and locker rooms across the state. That's the reaction. So we can set that up as we go forward, but that's really what happened.
Yeah. So what was going to be the impact of the Charlotte ordinance down in that city, which is obviously the largest market in North Carolina?
Oh, well, there's no telling what the impact would be. I mean, you could take the fiscal impact, right, where Charlotte said not only the public facilities, but all private facilities have to conform to this ordinance. So Company X, you have to take the bathroom signs off of your facilities and make all facilities neutral. What does a company do? Say you're Bank of America, who came out, you know, against HB2, and you have millions of square feet, tens of millions of square feet in downtown Charlotte that all has to be transformed. You have to take the urinals off your wall. You have to put water closets in. You have to put stalls in everywhere that you had water closets. No telling what the cost. I'm an architect. That's a phenomenal amount of money that you'd have to spend to do that. So there's a financial implication to that. There's no telling what the implication would be to businesses, private businesses that now who didn't want to do that would have to do that, and their customers wouldn't like that. What's going to happen to their businesses long term as well? So that's why we had to react. Now with our legislation, private businesses can do whatever they choose to do. But under the Charlotte ordinance, they had to abide by whatever the city of Charlotte, the city government, the city council was choosing for their business.
Yeah, so much for liberty down in Charlotte, North Carolina. And then obviously the common sense side of it, the danger side of it, is that Charlotte's move was to basically give you access to whatever bathroom you feel like identifying with, which our concern has been from day one, and I know it's been yours and the governor's and everybody in the legislature. I'm not so concerned with the, you know, by most estimates, Dan, there's probably about 700,000 transgender people in America. That's probably on the high end, but that's nationwide. There are also 840,000 registered sex offenders. Right here in North Carolina, there's almost 17,000 registered sex offenders and over 1 million girls 14 and under right here in North Carolina. Now you open up the bathrooms, you open up the locker rooms. It's not the transgendered person I'm worried about. It's the sexual predator who now has access. We're going to pick it up there with Dan Forrest, Lieutenant Governor of the great state of North Carolina. We'll be right back after that. What an apropos song for today's show here on Call to Action Radio. A little Rebel Rebel with, well, I'm an obvious pick, right? Rebel Rebel, obvious pick. I'm not so sure about our great Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Dan Forrest, here in North Carolina. Do you feel like a rebel, like especially lately? I mean, you've been under a lot of fire for the bathroom bill.
No, I mean, I think, you know, I think I'm on the right side of this. You know, I don't think I'm the rebel in it. I'm trying to stand up for what's good and right and true in our state and make sure we protect it. So, no, I don't really feel like a rebel in it.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, a growing portion of our country now sees us as the rebels. We're the problem. We're the hate-filled people. And that brings us, of course, to what we're talking about today, HB2. So when Charlotte passed it, the first time they tried, they got shot down. I remember when that happened and all the churches and a lot of people came out and gathered down in Charlotte at the city council chambers and pushed it back, and then everything's flipped. You get a new mayor, you get some different people on the city council, and then once they pulled the trigger and they actually instituted it, it was really a foregone conclusion that the legislature would act. You on the Senate side, and then more on the House side. Was that the deal?
Well, you didn't have a choice. I mean, the act itself was unconstitutional, so you had to deal with the ordinance from a constitutional standpoint. But more importantly, it had a effective date on it that came up on April 1st, right? And that was 25 days before session started. Yeah. Could you imagine what would happen if somebody got molested, somebody got hurt, something happened in one of these bathrooms? Again, not by a transgender person. Nobody has said that all along the way.
No, nobody said that all along the way.
It hasn't come out of anybody's mouth. But a predator, somebody that has ill intent, goes into a bathroom and does harm. Can you imagine the blowback on the governor, on the legislature, by people saying the media, everybody else, you had time to do this. Yeah. Why didn't you deal with this before? So you're certainly darned if you do and darned if you don't,
right,
related to the timing of the issue. But we had to deal with it constitutionally. And then from just a pure protection standpoint, not only protecting women and children, but also protecting the business community in Charlotte, who is going to take a massive hit on this.
Yeah. What was the constitutional rub? Because we heard everybody talking about that from day one.
Well, the constitutional rub is that the state of North Carolina has the authority for public accommodation and the municipalities don't. So when we're dealing with these issues about employment law and public accommodation and these kinds of things, those things fall to the state. And we're one of those states that all the responsibilities that the city have are really given out. They're handed out by the state, right? We can kind of look at this almost as a reverse of what happens with the federal government. We know that everything that is not laid out in the Constitution for the federal government goes to the states. It's kind of the same thing locally. I mean, the states are really in control. They give their power to the municipalities.
Right.
A lot of people don't understand that. We talk a lot about local control. It's not exactly how it all works. I mean, we fund a lot of the activities within these cities and towns in North Carolina, and so we give them their authority and control. And public accommodation is not one of those authorities we've doled out. So they knew what they were doing was against the law. They just chose to do it anyway.
And do you think their whole point was to get to exactly what we have gotten to,
yeah,
which is
sure
just a PR fight that they can label us, it's an election year, because we have our attorney general, which I wanted to ask you about that. Here he is again, dereliction of duty, refusing to defend the laws of the state. But it seems to me the whole thing was just a big PR play.
Yeah, the attorney general could have stopped it with the stroke of a pen. He could have said, no, you can't do that. It would have been done and everything would have been over. But no, it's political. And here's how you know. If this was an ideological battle and you had a company like PayPal that said, we are pulling out of Charlotte, we're not going to grow, expand our business by 400 employees, we're going to pull out because you're big discriminators. If this was an ideological battle, they'd pull out of the other 28 states that have the same law. They wouldn't do business with the federal government because we have the same law. They certainly wouldn't do business in Saudi Arabia and Yemen and places where the LGBT community is not only persecuted, they can be executed.
Yeah.
That's not ideological. It's political. So once you get past all the fury of the first couple weeks and you realize, oh, wait a minute, this is political season. We have an election coming up in 6 months. Then you know what you're after here.
Yeah, and then obviously it's continued to ramp up, and now you've got we've had the concerts that have canceled, and now you've got the NBA threatening the city of Charlotte that they're not going to do the All-Star game there. I guess it would be next year, and one concert after another, and some of these businesses saber rattling, and obviously PayPal decided to pull out. We'll see if that lasts. But do you think? I mean, I'm not worried about the state legislature. I'm certainly not worried about you. This is going to be difficult for the governor because I don't know that this was necessarily one of his big issues in and of himself. But do you think we're going to hold our ground here as a state?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, same thing happened in Houston. You go back to Houston a year ago, and they were dealing with this problem too, and the sky was falling, and all the businesses were going to pull out of Houston. And remember, Houston is strongly a liberal city. It's a very liberal city, and they shot this thing down. They're building 20 million square feet of office space in Houston right now, is my understanding. So Houston business has rebounded. They just had the Final Four in Houston. Everybody didn't play. It's a big game that they play. And yes, are there short-term consequences of this? Certainly there are. I mean, there are people sitting out there thinking about expansion possibilities right now. Where are we going to go? Where are we going to grow? Right now, I would imagine that that person that's in charge of that is probably not going to put North Carolina on the list to hand to their CEO or CFO because of what's going on right now. It's a shame. It's too bad because we are the best state for business in America, but we're going to continue to be. So we have to, you survive these short-term things, and then you continue to play the long-term game like we're doing.
And then let's start getting into the bill itself. Of course, the first part of the bill, just dealing with, here it is, part one, single-sex, multiple occupancy bathroom and changing facilities. And it's really just kind of codifying the fact that in order to use the men's room, you have to be designated as a man based on your it's just ridiculous that we're even talking
about
this.
It is ridiculous.
But your birth certificate. So you know, like you and I, just let me help you with your vocabulary here, would be considered cisgender, C-I-S, cisgender, which means, Lieutenant Governor.
I have a son that went to Carolina. I know all
about
this.
You know all about this, right. So for most of our people, yeah. which, God bless them, maybe not know this yet, that means you still identify with the gender of your birth. So all the law was saying was that if you want to use a man's bathroom, you need to be in biologically a male, and it needs to be, you know, matched to your birth certificate. So if a transgender actually went through it, like we're doing an event on June 30th, where there will be a man there named Walt Heyer who went through the surgery and changed himself to a woman. And then now he's going to have to get his birth certificate changed because he looks like a guy until he went through all that, and then he looks like a woman. But in this case, it was really just a matter of if you're a boy, use the boy's room. If you're a girl, use the girl's room.
Yeah, I mean, it was human decency for, you know, for generations. It's been the same. You know, the interesting thing is that back 100 years ago, or a little more than 100 years ago, the women's liberation movement was fighting to make sure they had separate bathrooms for women and that the women were protected because they did have problems with men and yeah. women's rooms and those types of things. And that was part of the women's liberation movement, was fighting to get that separation out there for protection purposes. And just biologically, we know that women are very different. They have different bodily functions. They take care of things differently than men do. There's things that just don't need to be combined. But beyond that, what happened in Charlotte was, again, I hit on it a little bit earlier, is their law went so far as to say you couldn't identify men and women separately on the bathroom signs. So you had to take those signs down. So now you basically have a free-for-all, right? And where do I go? What do I do? How do I do it? And that allowed a loophole. Obviously, they were trying to appease the transgender community, right? So they allowed a loophole that would say, yeah, any man can go into a facility with any woman. And I mean, this is a far-fetched scenario, right? But it's one that a basketball coach, junior high girls basketball, coaching basketball, the girls get done with the game, they go to shower. Well, the coach walks in to shower with them afterward. You never consider that, right?
We would all go ballistic.
But that's the free-for-all it created.
Yeah, really, which you obviously had to, for the sake of decency, for the sake of the citizens of not just the North Carolina, but the entire country. You have to act, and that's why we call it common sense legislation. More with the Lieutenant Governor, Dan Forrest, when we come back right after this. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio, live here today with our great Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Dan Forrest, here in the great state of North Carolina, talking about the now infamous bathroom bill. It's caused all kinds of shockwaves, not a shock, but it's really been amazing to watch the left react to this and demonize people like the Lieutenant Governor and really anybody that stands up for this thing. And we talk about common sense and they talk about hate. Where do you think this is all going? And then I want to dive back into the bill here. And what's the ultimate objective? Do you think it's just going to blow over?
Well, I mean, I think this will blow over. I think the Charlotte issue and the bathroom ordinance will blow over. I think the larger worldview question is going to, you know, it is the question of our times. It's not unrelated to the marriage amendment and really the left having to do their work through the federal courts. I mean, we know this will end up going to the federal courts, too. It's going to find its way to the Fourth Circuit in Richmond, Virginia, and they're going to do the same thing they did with the marriage amendment. Ultimately, you know, they're going to start telling states what they have to do related to even things like bathroom accommodations. But I think this is a time, what we've seen through this is we have seen the right stand up. And we've seen people come out of the woodwork on this issue. The support for HB2, for, not against, HB2,
massive,
has been overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
I've never in my lifetime, I haven't seen anything like this on an issue like this. So I think that even the court is perhaps running a slippery slope in America to where they are making decisions now that people are starting to open their eyes on issues like this one, where this one's so common sense and so easy to understand.
Well, let's go to this was back on April 19th, and you just mentioned the Fourth Circuit Court. And I do want to get back into this bill here in a minute. But the Fourth Circuit Court, this is from April 19th, just a couple weeks ago. A policy barring a transgender student from using the boys' restrooms at his Virginia high school is discriminatory, a federal appeals court ruled Tuesday, which is actually not terribly accurate. All the Fourth Circuit Court did was allowed the case to go forward.
That's right. They sent it back down to the lower court to continue to be discussed at that lower court. They didn't make a final opinion on this, on that issue. The interesting thing about that was, if you read the papers the next day in North Carolina, they're all claiming victory on the bathroom issue, saying it's over, it's done,
it's
now
done.
We need to move on and accept what the Fourth Circuit. It had nothing to do with North Carolina. They weren't even referring to what we did in North Carolina. But on top of that, they had been saying then for the 3 or 4 weeks previous that this wasn't about bathrooms. But all of a sudden, the court rules now it's about bathrooms.
Now it's about bathrooms.
So they want it both ways, every way, and working it all against the middle.
Are you concerned? Is the governor concerned about what's going on with the Fourth Circuit? Because if they come back and actually start ruling that it's discriminatory, now we have an issue. Now we got a problem.
Yeah, then you got to fight on your hands, right? You got to figure out what to do. I don't know. I mean, certainly, yeah, we should all be very concerned about anything the Fourth Circuit does. The Fourth Circuit is basically a judge who's in charge of the Fourth Circuit who gets to pick his panel to review, and he's going to pick 2-1 every single time. So they're always going to win on the Fourth Circuit.
Right.
So you will never win that case as long as that liberal judge is in charge, right? So anyway, that's the way it goes down. And yeah, we should all be concerned about that, but that has its ramifications all the way up the ladder. We need Congress to start doing things about our courts. We need to use the separation of powers and the powers that they have to keep the checks and balances in place with our government. And if they're not going to do that, then we do have a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see that playing out on the federal level. On the state level here in North Carolina, where we're broadcasting from, my question is, who do I have to call to get our Attorney General impeached? Has anybody talked about that, or is it just too late in the game? He's going to run for governor, then he's gone.
Yeah, it's too late in the game. You know, he's down that road now. We're 6 months away from an election. Nobody's going to go into impeachment process while you're in the middle of a campaign here. So that's just not going to happen. But listen, I mean, his record speaks for itself. Everything we've done in North Carolina since we've been in charge over the last 5 years, he has said no to defending. We have had to go out of the state for outside counsel. We have to, you know, when the speaker and I called the special session to deal with this bathroom issue in Charlotte, people started on the left started clamoring about $42,000 a day. It's not that much, by the way, because they're always sort of in session. There's always money being spent.
Yeah.
But nobody's clamoring about all the legal costs that our attorney general has cost us through the years here in North Carolina for not defending the law, not doing his job. Where is all the clamoring from the newspapers on that?
Yeah, remarkably silent. What a shock. I'm still
amazing.
Trying to get over that shock, yes. Let's talk about part two here in the bill, because I think this one was kind of confusing to people, myself included. Statewide consistency in laws related to employment and contracting, which also dealt with kind of a minimum wage aspect of that. That to me kind of seemed like oil and water. And I know you don't write the legislation, so what was the deal with that? Because I know they are linked. What happened with trying to deal with the public safety and the issues with the bathroom deals with contracting and the contracts with these cities. I'm glad you explained this earlier. Most people don't understand. They look at the state and go, well, it's run the same thing as the federal government. No, it isn't. The federal government, the 10th Amendment, gives states a whole lot of independence. A state allows for cities and townships because that's the only way you're going to manage an entire state with, 12 million people, whatever we have here in North Carolina.
People,
so you give them the authority, and it's different. It's not the same thing. They're not autonomous like states want to be.
Yeah, they don't have the authority just to create whatever law
right.
they want. You know, this notion, again, of local control, being the moniker of the day. With local control, well, it stops at some point. And the state's authority is to give authority to those cities for certain things and not for others. And so when they cross that line, and they're crossing the line in a lot of ways, and we kind of see this happening all over the country where this is now being pushed through lawsuits. A city says, I want to increase the minimum wage in my city to $20 an hour. What we said when we came back and wrote this was, no, you don't have the authority for public accommodation. No, you don't have the authority for employment law. We have 652 counties and municipalities in North Carolina. You can't have 652 different laws. You'd have to hire thousands and thousands of new lawyers. Every company, if you're a Walmart or a McDonald's or somebody like that, you have to have lawyers in every town and county just to deal with the different laws that are changing every day. That's why states don't do that. That's why we had to codify employment law. That's why you have to codify the minimum wage, because this in these cities, especially in the West now, where minimum wage have been hiked up to some level, you see people like Walmart pull out of town. You see them leave, right? They know that they're going to win in the end. So there's got to be better ways to deal with this. So it needs to be dealt with at the state, so it's uniform across your whole state.
So when they open the door on the bathroom issue, and I use that phrase quite literally, when they open that door, then that brought into question this inconsistency all over the state, right? right? And that's is that why you had to put this
aspect
in there?
Yeah, same thing. There's all kinds of whispering going on from different cities. You know, even Asheville was looking at the bathroom ordinance at the time. When it all blew up in Charlotte, then Asheville said, no, we're not going to do that right now. Good for them.
Yeah.
Kudos to them.
Common sense prevailed.
That's right.
Which was strange.
And so there's all kinds of employment law tricks going on with the cities to kind of subvert and get around state laws. And so that had to be codified there, too.
Now, what about the discrimination part in terms of employees of the state, public employees being able to sue based on discrimination? What was the big dust up there?
Well, the issue was at the state level, you can still sue in the state federal law. So we have federal laws related to discrimination, and we have for a long time. And you can still sue in the state of North Carolina under federal law. Some people will say that takes longer to do it. It's a more arduous process to do it that way, but it does exist. And my understanding is that the legislators were trying to simplify the process so there weren't all these different avenues out there. So that got some people's hair on the back of their neck standing up going, wait a minute, you're trying to take away our ability to sue for discrimination. That's not the case at all. You could always sue for discrimination. So that's one of those things that the governor in his executive order was attempting to clarify as well.
But therein lies the rub that what they want to see and what they looked at this, because they looked through the list of who you can't discriminate against, which has been established right from the Supreme Court on down.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
What was not in there is discrimination based on sexual orientation.
Which, again, has nothing to do with the Charlotte bathroom ordinance, by the way. So they're trying to use that ordinance as then a way into our law that we did and against that ordinance to say, oh, wait a minute, now you're discriminating. Now, our law's been the same. We clarified it, right? But our law's been the same. It's the same as 28 other states.
I was going to say, it's the same not like as North Carolina's government. Out of whack here with the rest of the country.
28 other states have the same law we do. The federal government does as well. So, no, I mean, we're the same. Basically, we're the same state that we were prior to Charlotte's ordinance. We struck down the ordinance, so it didn't go into effect. We're the same state afterwards. So any business that comes and says you're discriminatory, absolute lie. There's no truth to it at all. We're doing the same thing today we were doing prior to Charlotte's ordinance and that we've been doing all along, actually. So, no, that's a big lie.
Now, what about some of the one of the earliest interviews when you were on, I don't know if it was NBC or MSNBC, who it was, and they were hammering it pretty good. You did a great job, as always. But what do you, have you had a chance to talk to some of these corporations that are poo-pooing the state of North Carolina? What are you running into with these folks?
Yeah, I've talked to a few, and I immediately got on the phone, obviously, when this started going down, and I started seeing the HRC thing, the big pushback, and all the form letters, and you know, I started getting form letters from CEOs and executives and that sort of thing. So I got on the phone and started calling people. And my question was, especially in those early few days, was, have you even seen the bill? And the answer was always no with everybody. Have you read any of it? No. I said, would you like me to tell you the truth about what we did? And so I'd go through that conversation with them. And then in the end, inevitably it was, well, you know, Human Rights Campaign has a strong lobby. We don't want to be fighting them. We don't want them to come against us. And that is really where.
So some of them actually said that to you.
Yeah, I had two say that to me. And so, I mean, I know
squeaky wheel gets the grease.
I know,
HRC is the squeaky wheel.
I know that's
wheel.
The case. That's right. That's right. And so that's where we come into this whole thing about HRC holding these companies hostage. At some point, they're going to cross the line, I believe, with the CEOs who are going to really be facing the wrath of the hypocrisy that goes on a Target.
Yeah, like Target.
Right.
Yep. They're feeling it in the pocketbook, which is why we need to act. See, they're afraid of HRC, which is the Human Rights Campaign, the number one pro-homosexual agenda group on the planet. They're afraid of them because they act. They're usually not afraid of us because we do nothing. We just kind of take care of ourselves in our own little worlds. But it's starting to change now. I think we finally found a line in the sand that most of us, common sense Christians and conservatives, are willing to defend. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back.
This is where I say I don't need to have control. This is where I
welcome back. It's Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. Today, the pleasure of having the great Lieutenant Governor here in the state of North Carolina, Dan Forrest, good friend of mine, and doing a great job. It's really been amazing to watch North Carolina bounce back over the last 4 years. And we've got people listening to us in other states who I think, Dan, should be, well, a little envious, because it's really amazing to see what's happened in North Carolina over the last 4 years. That's a pretty incredible record to run on.
It's an unbelievable record. There is no other state in the country that can claim the things that we have claimed. And, you know, could run down the list for you, but I've done it a million times probably on your show. But it's a bright, shining star in America and a pretty phenomenal turnaround for a state.
Yeah. So what's this season like for you? I mean, it's all ramping up. You were past the primary season. You didn't have to deal with that. But now we're going into the general election. When does it really get hot and heavy for a lieutenant governor running for re-election?
Well, I think it's generally already hot and heavy. I mean, our schedule, and people who know us know this, we never slowed down. I mean, we ran hard, as I was telling you in the break. You know, we were doing 20 hours a day before I was elected because that was my full-time job. I left my architecture firm so I could run for office, and I did that full-time for a year and a half. And that was grueling, right? It's a different kind of grueling now. I mean, now you're lieutenant governor, you're serving, you do all the duties.
Job.
You have a job. Yeah, so it's really like anybody else that's running that has a job, right? You have to do your duties, and then you find time in the after hours to do the campaigning. And so it has its own pressures to it, but it's different this time around. Certainly the fundraising aspects of it are easier once you're already elected than they were before. Oh, so yeah. You just have a different focus. Your focus is going to be more mass media rather than we have a strong grassroots. We have probably the best grassroots organization for a Republican candidate that's ever existed, primarily because of social media and the abilities to reach people you didn't have before. Yeah. So we're organized in a vast majority of the states. We're organized in more counties than the Republican Party is. So we have good grassroots organization. Now our trick is how do you get into the urban areas of the state and get your message out? So
yeah.
You have to do that through mass media.
Yeah, that's a much tougher ground to hoe. I've been dying to ask you, can I ask you about presidential race?
Sure.
You ready to go there?
Yeah.
I would love to get your take on it. Dan, besides being a friend and the lieutenant governor of the great state of North Carolina, fellow Christian, follower of Christ, but how are you reading the tea leaves here in our nation where we've got Donald Trump's captured? I would not go so far as to say he's captured the nation's imagination, because I don't think that's what it is. But you got a Donald Trump, you have Hillary Clinton, and then Ted Cruz and Kasich trying to play a contested convention game. These are pretty amazing days. I don't think there's been an election like this in our lifetime, certainly. But what? How are you?
Certainly not with the cast of characters.
No,
you know, I mean, certainly Reagan came in 76 and you know, was close to getting the number and then didn't get the nomination, and we got Jimmy Carter for it. You know, so you know, what happens if Trump's in the lead and he doesn't get it? Do you know? Are you going to concede it to Hillary Clinton? I don't know. I mean, nobody knows. Obviously, it's almost ridiculous to sit around and pontificate with so many moving pieces and so many, but the cast of characters has definitely been interesting in this. It's not at all like any of us thought it was going to play out. And obviously, from the average person on the street, you can see where the Donald Trump appeal comes from. People are just tired. They want somebody to say it as it is. They want somebody just to say what's on their mind that they may not have the guts to say in public, kind of thing, right? But I think what happens is it leaves a lot of questions for people as well. So all those other people that aren't supporting Trump, there's a lot of question marks out there. You know, how is he going to lead? Is this kind of boisterous, boastful, arrogant type of personality going to change, and all of a sudden he's going to transform into a statesman as he travels around the world establishing foreign policy and those types of things? I think those are the big question marks. So I think there's a lot of unknowns, and think it's a time when Americans better wake up and, you know, pay attention to what's going on.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to try to consider the psyche of the American people, because you've got, you know, 42-43%, they're going to be in the tank for Hillary Clinton no matter what.
Yeah, that's right.
And an amazing amount of people that have come out for Bernie Sanders, who's an avowed socialist. And if people feel the burn, you know, young people, well, why do you like him? Well, because he's genuine. What does he stand for? I don't know. Free college education. I mean, that and the Trump phenomenon. I mean, when you look at the culture, you've been traveling the state for years, Dan, and have, you know, you're very politically astute. Is it just anger? Is that all that's driving the Donald Trump thing? Anybody but an established member of the inside class?
I think that's a big part of it right now. You're sitting here, you're looking at Congress, you know, and you're reading certainly a lot of the media's perspective on what's going on in Congress. Whether take Obamacare, you know, there have been hundreds of bills passed by the Republicans to do away with Obamacare, do a better bill. They never make it any. They don't get anywhere in the Senate, right? Even when you have control of the Senate, you don't really have control of the Senate. The Senate doesn't have the ability as Republicans to pass most things because they have to get Democrats to agree with them to do it or more liberal Republicans to agree with them. So it's a very difficult time up in D.C. now, and this polarization of the two sides in D.C. has created a rift that we've never seen before. Back in the day, when those members lived in Washington, D.C., and they weren't traveling home every weekend, their families, their kids went to school together, they vacationed together, they went out to eat together after session. They may disagree politically and on policy, but they got together and they were friends. And now you don't have any of that. So you have these polar oppositions that go on, which is not good for for our country at all. And so the American people are finally reading this and they're going, wait a minute, we've had a do nothing, so to speak, Congress for a long time. And so, yeah, absolutely. And it should be a reaction. It's a rightful reaction. I think that's what, you know, Ted Cruz ran on this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He ran as the outsider. Donald Trump ran as the outsider, but Ted Cruz is the insider outsider. So so Trump's right, the real right. outsider, right? So so that's what you get.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating for me to watch the country. And again, Donald Trump talks about millions and millions of votes. We're talking about a Republican primary. And now he's got some people out of the woodwork that normally wouldn't vote in a Republican primary. But once he gets into the general election, I think this is the least predictable election cycle I've ever
sure.
seen. Because Donald Trump throws all of that off, because I don't know what's going to happen with the mushy middle. We have more people going to the middle, more people going unregistered or going, even some libertarians, but most people going independent or unregistered.
Unaffiliated.
And I think that's because, thank you. And I think that's because people don't have the courage of their convictions. If you go too far to the right or too far to the left, people aren't living and they're not thinking off of the solid ground. So the middle seems safe because they don't know what they believe. And it's just this safe area. And all of a sudden, anybody that stands for something is an outsider. It's really, I think the political, what we're seeing in the political world is just a manifestation of the spiritual reality, is that most of this country is clueless and lost.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in fairness to a lot of people, most people are trying to just live. They're trying
right.
to get by. They're trying to, you know, get their kids through school and make a living and, you know, whatever.
Which is the promise of liberty.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And you don't want to have to be paying attention every single day to what's going on in legislation and reading all the bills and being an activist. Everybody doesn't want to be an activist, nor should they be.
Yeah.
You know, so that is the reality. And now you are seeing the effects of a system gone bad, really, is what it is.
Yeah, well, it's certainly a cleansing time, and we'll see what the system does. Because, you know, I don't know who they're more afraid of. I don't know. I think Hillary's the safest thing for the Republican establishment. I think Ted Cruz is a nightmare. And Donald Trump's, it's like playing craps. I mean, it's like we're going to Vegas. You just throw the dice. You have no idea what's going to happen
if
he gets
know.
Into office.
I don't think anybody knows. I think, obviously, you know, you're going to say he's going to be strong fiscally. I mean, we can probably say, yeah, most likely he'll get it fiscally. And you know, I think the word on the street is, you know, he wants to surround himself with strong people. I've heard, you know, Newt Gingrich's name being thrown out there. I mean, obviously, he was the architect of the Republican Revolution in 94, and that would be kind of like the Dick Cheney move for George Bush, for people that weren't comfortable with George W.
Right.
Bush. So more of a, you know, somebody that's had some history and that sort of thing. So I think you're going to see all these things start to come together here in the final months, and I think you'll see it coalesce. I really do. I think, honestly, I mean, no offense to Ted Cruz or anybody else, I think it's going to be hard to beat Donald Trump at this point. I think there's too many things going on right now in his favor. He's not going to sit around and do nothing.
No,
he's not stupid.
Sure. No, he's definitely not stupid. And with tomorrow, Indiana, which is huge, that might be the end of the story. Well, we got just a couple minutes left, Dan. Just most of our audience is here in North Carolina, be it here in the Triangle or over in the Triad or down in the Charlotte area. Speak directly to them because I know you want their vote. And why should they give it to you?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, if you are one of those people out there that has said for years, you know, we don't get involved in politics, we don't trust politicians, they never do what they say when they're running, that type of thing, I can say you can look to North Carolina, the legislature and the governor and lieutenant governor, certainly, and say we have done everything we said we were going to do, plus some. We have transitioned North Carolina. We've turned it around fiscally. We've put $4.5 billion back into your pocket. We've paid down our debt by over $3 billion. We put $1 billion away in the rainy day fund. We've spent $1.5 billion more on education now than when we got elected. We gave teachers the largest raise in the United States of America. We are connecting every single one of our classrooms to high-speed broadband. We are doing the things that normally are done after a group of people have been in office for a long time. We've gotten done in 3 years. And so, unfortunately, it takes more than that. I mean, I know people hear this all the time. We need more time. But you really do. I mean, if we want to really transform the state, then we need, unfortunately, the other side was in charge for 140 years. We've had three. And so we need some more time to continue the success story. And I think North Carolina is going to be a bright, shining star for this entire country if we have a little bit more time to perfect it.
And I think, and this is a broad stroke, but I think it's accurate in this case, if the North Carolina State Legislature hadn't turned over from Democrats to Republicans first time in over a century, and then we get two Republicans in charge and the governor and the lieutenant governor yourself, none of this would have been possible without that.
That's right.
You and the governor could have been in there, but with a Democrat legislature, none of this would have happened.
Yeah, and vice versa. Certainly, you'd still have problems. So yeah, I mean, we got a good thing going in North Carolina. We want to continue it. We want to continue to put people to work and, put more money back in your pocket so you can decide what's best. And a lot of misinformation out there, and I would just encourage your listeners to, if you want a video to share, and go to danforrest.com. We have lots of videos about all these facts we've been talking about out there for your listeners to share with their friends.
And do you still need some grassroots folks? Do you need volunteers?
Need volunteers. You can sign up at danforrest.com as well. And if you want to donate, you can do that.
Yeah, you always got to mention that. It's important. It takes money to win. And we need you guys to win because we need to keep North Carolina on the right track. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, my brother in Christ, my dear friend, thanks for being here, buddy. It's always great to have you.
As always, Steve, it's great to be with you.
We'll do it. Let's try to do it once a month.
Let's do it.
Up until Election Day. That'd be great to have you back. Okay, friends, there you go. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. This is Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. We'll be back, God willing, tomorrow.